de la revolución del mundo.
Justice by any means necessary.
This program is brought to you by Haymarket Books as part of the Socialism 2024 program. You can hear more recordings from the conference by subscribing to the Socialism Conference podcast feed. Many video recordings are also available at socialismconference.org. If you enjoy these recordings, you should join us at Socialism 2025, which will be held in Chicago next summer, July 3rd through the 6th, 2025. If you are ready to put ideas into action, and get organized with others from across the country and the world. Make a plan with your organization and your friends to come to the Socialism Conference.
I'm going to say a few things to kind of give us some context here in Chicago before introducing Jason and Rosemary. Out of curiosity, could I get a show of hands of folks who either are based in Chicago or feel that they follow Chicago politics fairly closely?
That's okay. I'm done.
Yeah, wonderful. Okay, and then folks who are not from Chicago but are interested in this question of movements and elections. Okay, awesome, that's great. I think we have a really dynamic mix in the room, that's wonderful. Okay. Chicago is, I think in some ways, epitomizes many of the neoliberal trends that many cities across the country struggle with, and in some ways I think is fairly unique. And I just wanted to give a few examples of some of the key questions that have kind of shaped politics in Chicago in the last couple of decades. So Chicago is maybe most notoriously the home of a hideous police commander named John Burge, who led the torture of more than 100 black and some Latinx people into false confessions here in the city of Chicago. So there has been a decades-long struggle against state violence and repression and racism in this city emanating from that. It's also the city of Laquan McDonald, whose name many people may know as the 16-year-old who was murdered by police 10 years ago. It's also the city of Rekia Boyd. It's also the city of many other people who should be here, who we mourn. Just because it's nearing the 10-year anniversary, I want to say the names of Rashad McIntosh and Deshaun Pittman, who were murdered within the span of a weekend shortly after the murder of Mike Brown, and the name of Ronald Johnson, who was murdered by police shortly after Laquan McDonald almost 10 years ago. And struggles of surrounding those families continue to this day and really never cease and continue to be really central to every movement in this city. Chicago is the city of a neoliberal laboratory of education reform, where charter schools and union busting has really been a consistent project of the city. And it's also the city of the Chicago Teachers Union that has helped really lead a labor revival and fight back against that agenda that entrenches educational apartheid and does not serve educators. It's the city of the home of the migrant mass mega marches that erupted in 2006. It's the place where the very first of those wild, mass demonstrations in which people described the giant awakening of migrant labor first took off. And it continues to be a place where we struggle for migrant justice. We have some incredible legislation protecting migrant rights as a sanctuary city. And we have had tens of thousands of migrants and asylum seekers brought to the city of Chicago through, you know, criminal means from states like Texas, who have been really left in devastating conditions, and I think have led to a more pronounced struggle and debate in the city around housing justice, around worker justice, around what kind of priorities are going to drive our city. It's also a city in which, you know, there's just a presumption that every politician is a Democrat. There are no Republicans here. You know, that's an exaggeration, but that's sort of the reputation. And it's also, interestingly, a place where you don't need to declare a party affiliation in order to run for office. And that has actually created a unique space in which activists and socialists have organized grassroots campaigns like that of Rosana Rodriguez Sanchez in the 33rd Ward, and many others who have self-identified as socialists and taken a role in City Hall. And where the United Working Families and many other movements banded together and defeated the mayoral bid of Paul Vallis and elected instead Mayor Brandon Johnson. Johnson, you know, really was trained in the movements, became a, you know, a political figure through Chicago's movements, and was brought to office on the incredible work of movement activists and organizers making it happen against a very uphill campaign. So we at Rampant were interested in opening up this space because you know, this feels like a really critical achievement for our movements, and it's posed lots of new questions and challenges. And we wanted to bring people together from a variety of different movements to talk about those challenges, you know, in realistic terms together, and look at, you know, what have we accomplished, and how do we move forward. I think there's an inevitable question that social movements face after being in opposition and defending communities against a series of attacks, where there starts to be a desire to be able to shape things for ourselves, a desire to be able to run candidates and take office and propose policy. And now that we have a quote-unquote movement mayor in office, we still face many of the challenges of a neoliberal city in which, you know, the wealth and power of a real estate industry and a financial industry remain pitted against the working people and the people of color and many others here in Chicago. So, all of that said, I am extremely honored to introduce two incredible panelists. We have had some changes to our program, so I regret that Gerardo Marciano is not able to join us today, nor is another teacher activist we were hoping to hear from, Alice Costas. But we do have Jason Perez, who is a longstanding fighter and organizer against racism and state violence, was a part of the Black Abolitionist Network during the 2020 uprisings against anti-Black racism and state violence, a part of the Defund CPD campaign, and is a part of the United Working Families today. So let's welcome Jason. As well as Rosemary Vega, who also is a longstanding fighter in the city. I first met Rosemary in 2013 as a parent who was organizing to save her children's school, Lafayette, from closure as Rahm Emanuel was, you know, taking an axe to public education and closing a historic number of 50 public schools in the city. And Rosemary and her family were, I believe, the only family to lead a sit-in occupation of their school, among many families fighting to defend their communities and their schools. So let's welcome Rosemary as well. So I'm going to ask each panelist a couple of questions, and then we'll open up the floor for everyone to add their thoughts and questions as well. So I just want to start by inviting you each to say a little bit about the movements that you have been a part of and some of the background that has brought us to this moment of Mayor Johnson's election and that brings you here to this panel. So if either of you would like to start off on that one.
You want to go or you need me to start the fire? No, I'm joking.
Go for it. Yeah, go for it.
Hello. Good morning. Good morning. I'm so nervous, y'all. My name is Rosemary Vega. I am a public education activist, advocate. I advocate for parents and students. We are also the home of 50-plus schools shut down in one day in black and brown communities. We are also the home of you know, we lost over 266,000 black and brown families during that closure. So, you know, that is also, you know, we are the city of pushing out black and brown families, not just through the cops or Burge or, you know, because I was born in Puerto Rico, raised in Humboldt Park. I married my husband who was born and raised in Humboldt Park. So we know all too well about the police, the torture, the pulling over. All of that, we are from Chicago. We are true Chicagoans, and we felt it. Live in the hood, be in the hood, represent the hood. We know the hood. We can tell you all about the hood. But that changed in 2013 when my school, Lafayette, was on a list to be closed. My whole world crumbled because all I knew was Humboldt Park. All I knew was Lafayette. Coming from Puerto Rico, Lafayette was my home school, so they kind of helped me survive in Chicago. And when that school was going to be closed, my family and I, you know, I was devastated. They took something from me in Chicago that was me. And we take that for granted. When we're from Chicago, we're like, this is us, this is mine, you know? But politicians come in and they take things that mean things to you that means nothing to them. And that's what happened with Lafayette. I was crying to my husband, and he's like, I have a cooler. Let's go to the school. We ended up occupying, and, you know, we occupied that school, and we looked outside, and we saw, like, 200 people outside for us. And we knew that these are our people. These are the ones fighting for public schools. You know, when you fight for something as good as public schools, something that is the resource, the home to so many black and brown students, some black and brown students, all they have is this. You know, they eat breakfast at school, they eat lunch at school, and then they go home without, you know, dinner sometimes. So schools are vital in our survival, in our communities. You know, schools are the seed to a community, you know? It starts in the school. So when that happened, we occupied. So again, before 2013, I was not an activist. I didn't know anything about activism. I didn't care about politics until they took my school. And when they took my school, I needed to know, tell me how long I go, because I'll stay here. I'm so sorry. Okay, just throw me like, hey. So that's when I learned about the Board of Education, which, by the way, I was also banned from there because they didn't like my emotions. I was too hood, too transparent. I wasn't coming up there like the white folks and parents to be like, well, statistics show. I would say, no, you're being racist. You're doing this to my community. And they hated that. And they hated every time I came. And every single time I came, they would only allow us to speak every other month. So I would speak from the chair. Fine, you don't want to let me speak. You're going to hear me from the audience. I disrupted every single meeting until they said, just ban her. And they banned me for 5 years, y'all. 5 years. 5 years I wasn't allowed to go into where I was supposed to represent my children and every other black and brown student in the city of Chicago. They shut me down. But that's what they do. That's what politicians do. So I come from the movement of public education, but I have also organized for Laquan McDonald, 16 shots and a cover-up, those rallies. I was a big lead organizer in those big rallies in Chicago for Laquan McDonald. We ran Rahm Emanuel, which I was one of his biggest critics. I heckled the man. I followed the man. He hated me. He hated me to the point where I would say, oh, you don't care. And he'll say, well, my wife cared. Well, I don't care about your wife. We were literally arguing about this. Like, he knew who I was. And when he saw me, I don't know if he knew me by Rosemary, but I know he was like, there's that damn agitator again. What the hell does she want? So I became very visible for something that meant to me. And from that moment on, I said, we can't allow another politician to have so much control over our city. Because no matter who sits in the chair, it's our city, our issues, our schools, our streets, right? Our communities. So no matter who is in office, we must remain in the fight. And we must, you know, when Brandon won, I went to that party that they throw the politicians. I was like, oh my God, I was there with everybody else. And when we were talking, people were like, oh my God, we finally won. And I was saying, this is where our fight actually starts. This is where our fight actually starts. We gotta hold those that are on our side responsible and accountable. We cannot allow a movement's energy, a movement's voice, a movement's message to be delivered and to be represented by one face, by one politician. It just can't happen. That's not who Chicago is. And that's it? Okay, okay. Jason. Turn this fire
off. Hey, y'all. Yeah, I'll just go through, you know, at least what I feel like is important just for context. You know, there's so many different beginnings. The one that stands out for me, obviously, was what my experience was. You know, I first started working as an organizer for SEIU back in 2006-07. But we had this campaign called the Big Box Living Wage Ordinance. And it was, you know, kind of like one of, you know, first movement wins that had an approach of community organizing organizations, labor unions, and then also at some level allowing to the table, which is, you know, and this is different than most other cities in the country, you know, usually small activist-y, sometimes what folks call like, you know, what folks call like ultra left groups also at part of the table and part of the organizing in order to get that win. You know, we got the win in terms of getting all the aldermen on board, and then, you know, Mayor Daley at the time vetoed the bill. And, you know, jump to now, right? We just had a mayor who passed, you know, a bill to sort of like tipped workers can now like get, you know, what is like the minimum wage. And that was like first 100 days right away, right? And that campaign took so long and so many nights and evenings and so many doors versus where we're at now. So, and that's, you know, almost a 20-year period. So what happened between then? A few things. We had a really good, really strong ACORN chapter, ACORN organization here, right, that trained a lot of folks on being dues-paying having members who actually pay dues and wasn't just foundation funded. We also have a lot of good structure-based organizations that were willing to challenge some of the narrowness of Alinsky organizing in terms of just focusing on kind of like liberal versions of economic justice issues and actually having a focus on racism, having a focus on sexism, having a focus on gentrification, challenging at the time, you know, a lot of charter schools. And then we also had the benefit of, you know, a different kind of SEIU local that was actually invested in having real relationships with community organizing groups and even more radical organizing groups, which grew into SEIU Healthcare Illinois Indiana now. And lastly, and I think it's just always important to remember, like, all of these different types of organizations bring a lot of members, a lot of folks who are from Chicago, born and raised, who have a lot of organizing skills across a broad spectrum of different types of fights, right? And soon what grew was this coalition called Grassroots Collaborative. And it was, you know, it's one of the most simplest things, but I still don't see like a lot of cities do it, at least in my current work, which is just like, you have community organizations meet with other labor unions and you talk through strategy, you decide on how to support movement stuff. And also you don't get into, you know, kind of this parochial thing, which, you know, and I know for sure a lot of labor unions do this, which is, you know, if you can't bring 500 people to this one whatever thing, then we're not gonna listen to you, we're not gonna engage with you, or we're not gonna build with you in any kind of genuine manner. And so, you know, that type of organizations and coalition building, you know, got thrown out. And then I would say the biggest and most important thing, and really why we even know like Brandon's name, right, is, you know, the first successful strike in generations, which was the CTU teacher strike. And it was a different kind of strike. It wasn't just a strike that was narrowly about teachers just getting their money, their funding, whatever, saying yes to charter schools, right? It was about keeping schools open. I mean, at least in my organizing time, it was just a normal thing for schools to get closed all the time. That was just like the normal thing for new charters to open up. But, you know, having the reform movement of CORE actually change the leadership in CTU, and then having a leadership in CTU, which also, you know, had a lot of dedicated rank and file, you know, like Marxist, revolutionary trade unionists, folks who are rooted in labor notes, like that actually cared about engaging with community organizations, definitely had an explicit strategy in terms of how to engage within Black communities, an explicit strategy around how to engage within Latino communities, an explicit strategy in terms of how to actually support anti-deportation organizing that was going on at the time, explicit strategy in terms of how to approach the organizing that was going on around abolition, and actually followed through on that. And so, and then out of that grew what is understood as United Working Families. And sometimes it gets kind of forgotten now, and I mean, we'll probably get into it later. You know, I think part of, you know, where we're at with, I think, Brandon and just like an electoral politics, at least in Chicago, is partly just us not following through on the things that got us there. But, you know, it was started and formed to be an explicit independent left political party, right? If you go through like the missions, values, the platform, all that, that's what was there. And, you know, we built it out like that, and that's different than most, you know, everyone is kind of doing IPOs, independent political organizations, there's Working Families Party, you know, and we can maybe talk later, there's, you know, United Working Families is very different from Working Families Party, and, you know, I think that's just important to hold in terms of how we're funded, how we do decision making, and the type of folks that we bring up within the process, not just in terms of who gets elected, but how we go about campaigning for elections. So I think the last piece though that I really want to hone in on is that, you know, what happened with Brandon was a product of deliberate, or you know, deliberate organizing across what most folks usually call social movement sectors or ultra-left sectors, across labor and across community organizing organizations. And if we want to keep at that and keep doing that, we're going to have to, you know, come back to that in a genuine way where we're meeting in rooms, talking through issues, talking through strategy, talking through platform to figure out our next steps. There's, you know, there's really like no shortcuts around that.
Thank you both. That was, I want to ask in broad terms so that you can choose like where to focus, and I'm sure many of us will have thoughts to fill in, how you assess what has changed and what has stayed the same over the last year as we've had this new administration, particularly around education politics. We are about to see the election of the first elected school board here in Chicago. That's been a very hard one fought. We're in our first year of experimentation with a new police accountability set up that was won partly out of the struggles of 2020. And we've also seen new budgets and new contracts provide police with additional funding and protection from accountability. So I'm interested in how you each see the degrees of progress that we've made and what remains to be done, or you know, or how you would characterize the last year.
I see it, the last year I see a lot of talk. You know, we have a lot of sugar talk and everything looks nice, you know, when it's in paper or as we talked about, but when it's in front or in action, where is that? We just had the DNC. We just had the DNC. We just had Chicago control like we've never been control in our life. In our life, we had something that we've never had with any other mayor. We had tweets coming out warning us what was coming for us if we acted a fool. We've never had that before. We had it with this mayor. We had it with this mayor, and we saw it, and we clearly saw it in the DNC. We just had the camps, the students fighting for Palestine. We come from this fight. Brandon knows how we do. We hit the streets. We do what we gotta do. He's done it. But now that the students did it, he's in office, control needs to be had. And he did that. And then on top of it, the cops came through in Chicago and swamped all these camps and arrested all these students and then blame another police department that works with the school. Listen. If it's Chicago Police Department, it's under you. It's you. That is you. You did that. You could have easily said, nah, not in Chicago. Because as a mayor from the movement, you move different. You sound different. He sounds just like Rahm and Lori. No different. I'm sorry, y'all. No different. And you know, Brandon, has went in as our friend, went in as a comrade. But the 2 weeks of sitting in office, he showed us who he really was when he said, when Rahm Emanuel, we had just run that man out of the city of Chicago for 16 shots and a cover-up. We had just, the city of Chicago was just starting to heal. We were just starting to feel a little bit seen when Brandon got there, because we all did that. That wasn't just movements. That was the entire city of Chicago who said we can't have Paul Vallis, because there was a lot of people that I brought out that don't vote, that voted. I took them out to vote personally. So there was a lot of people out of the movement that came out for Brandon, because we were like, we're either in or out. We went all in. So what we wanted were not slaps to our face. So how I evaluate it is that we put someone there in a movement, and that person from the movement is giving us little crumbs here and there to shut us down, but it's choking our movement. Choking, y'all. Choking. Because he has done things. Things have happened in the city of Chicago that we would have been up in arms outside if it was Lori or if it was Rahm. So yes, we're being choked as a movement. And yes, this is the point right here, right now, a perfect example that we have one of ours, he ain't mine no more, but one of ours, right, in office, and we need to evaluate who we are as activists, who we are as organizers, what and who are we on the ground. Because if I'm on the ground and someone tells me right now, we need to change stance, and I'm like, but we didn't allow Lori to do that, and you're telling me close your eyes to this, you ain't for me. You ain't my movement. Because my movement is we all win. We don't shut up to make you look good. We don't stop moving so you can find your place. We're gonna hold you accountable like we hold everybody else. We wanted you running in that position like we've been expecting everybody else. We wanted to defund the police. We wanted that. We should have had that. That's it. CPS, good things are happening. Good things are happening. We're about to get an elected school board. We still need to work on transparency because we don't have that. We don't have that. We're getting, oh, there's a budget. We're not getting the budgets. We're getting the budget. You know, when I was an activist, I'm still, but sorry. But fighting for public education, you need everything. You ask for all this stuff. Our friend waited till the day of to release budgets and budget cuts and all of that. Why? Because they're using our strategics in office to play with us. So that is my assessment. As an organizer, as an activist, as someone on the ground, I will always be a ground soldier. I'll say here, I will never run for office. My husband's like, don't you ever say that. I'm gonna say it here. You know, Brandon Johnson came here one time and in the mic he said, so if I sell y'all out, please know that I gotta get kids through college. Well, here we are, we're being sold out. And here I am in front of this mic saying, that is my assessment of Brandon. He is, we may not have Republicans, but we have flip-flops or false flaggers here because Democrats don't treat people like that. And if that is how Democrats are gonna start treating us, then Brandon was never one of ours. Please don't report this back. I'm joking.
Oh, this is yours?
I don't know whose water that is. I'm so nervous. I keep walking back and forth.
It might have been mine.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good. I think just the level set a little bit. Most folks, big city mayors, is Eric Adams, Karen Bass. What's that brother in Atlanta? Dinkins. And I know I have comrades who I care about deeply. Who whenever I'm making my complaints about Brandon, they'll bring that up. And I was even at a forum recently where, it was like formerly incarcerated organizers all across the country talking about all the different, things going on. Most folks had, horrifying stories in all their different cities. And, Chicago was able to say, oh, we have a office of recidivism, right? Like basic, folks who are formerly incarcerated can get basic income in the city. There's a whole host of other programs that happen under Brandon's administration. By no means am I saying that's the end all be all, right? It's a beginning and not enough. I think though, you know, I think I mean, there's been several disappointments within Brandon. I think the biggest one, and I mean, shout out to you for feeling that that's you feel like there's an actual strategy going on out of the Johnson administration. I'm not completely convinced of that. I think my larger issues is something as basic as, you know, I don't understand how you can be, you know, part of the cadre that like reformed your union and had a theory of change and a theory of organizing that says, hey, we have to be strike ready and have to be ready to strike, and then give folks, you know, the third degree just to have like equipment at their like protests in regards to Palestine, right? Or that you actually have that, you know, you have the Chicago, whatever the lawyers for the city, city hall, you know, going after all protesters who've done stuff around Palestine, right? Whereas, you know, you even had other mayors before drop those kind of things. But also like just, you know, just really basic smart politics, like just like, why are you hiring all these outside firms to do all your different civil cases, which are the same people who endorsed and funded Paul Vallis in your opposition? You know, like, why don't you just get rid of all those contracts and then just hire city lawyers in-house? I mean, it's just simple things like that, and you can go down the list of all, like, you know, that happening every step of the way. You know, I didn't expect Chicago to turn into, you know, like, the United Soviets of Chicago by any means, but I did expect that you know, that you actually wanted to govern. And to me, wanting to govern is that you get rid of all the people within the administrative apparatus that you deem it as your opposition, because like we are here to actually win, and we're here to actually govern. And still to this day, there's far too many people like within the administrative apparatus that are not that, you know. Or another simple thing is, because, you know, there's always a complaint, we can't get these people, we can't get the folks in or whatever. It's like, pick up the phone and call other unions, call other places all across the country and say, hey, come over here. Like, we want you over here. Like, actually, like, recruit and organize like the level of talent and folks that you actually need to be over here. Like, none of that ambition has happened within the office or within the other, you know, like the folks like within, you know, whatever Brandon's circle is. And then I think the biggest thing that I was most shocked by was, you know, the beginnings of like attacks. You know, that there was, you know, there was like this white paper that came out that said, hey, this is how you tax the rich within Chicago. It was from coalition partners who, the person who got attacked, I mean, I literally helped form a union against him. So, like, I mean, it's not like this guy's like, you know, some like ultra lefty or whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, the mayor's number two person is attacking him, being like, hey, you know, we don't want to tax the rich. We don't, that's not going to be part of our agenda. And so I guess it's just like, then, you know, what are we actually trying to do? And what are you doing in terms of coming into office? Cause, you know, I don't go by the, you know, I don't go by the like hold them accountable theory of organizing. You know, I believe fundamentally that, and you know, Brian Bean has a good article on this of just, you know, the whole premise of we're going to hold them accountable is you're basically saying that yes, the system is undemocratic, and that your theory of change and how you want to organize people is to just accept the lack of democracy in the world, and even for the folks that you elect, and then move from there. And you know, maybe naively, I'm not there yet, but it's like, no, if we elected this person on a very specific platform with specific policies, and they should actually stick to it. And you know, that's not happening at this moment, but you know, I feel like largely a lot of that's not happening in this moment is a product of, you know, and I think for a lot of our organizations that are in coalition and that was being held together by United Working Families, we very much fell into what, you know, happened with Obama for America or happened after Sanders 2020, which is that the organization, you know, like all of us, right, including myself in this, did not invest in like building up and being committed to sustaining and building that organization in order to have the mechanism in order to push for our agenda, which is like underworking, United Working Families. And so, you know, I sound like a broken record, but unless we get back to that, then I don't think, you know, what the mayor does or doesn't do, I think it just, it's really dependent on like what our organizing strategy is and the type of organization that we have around having an independent left political party here. And I think we still can do it. I think we have most of the things there. We just have to do it.
Which is kind of the problem, right? What you just said is true, except it becomes a problem when all of the ground movements are under the recent administration. So they move when they're told to move. And oh, I'm sorry. I got such a big mouth. I know. I'm like, what? So that's a big problem. Because what he just said is what we need to continue to do. The problem is we put one of ours in office and he took all of ours with him. From each organization, there's a connection directly to the mayor's office. So how are we independent from anything or any politician? Ours or not ours, he has a job to do. And that is be a politician. Be a politician. And there is a lot of things that he's not doing. For example, we have the big migrant issue. You know, his solution was Gardner. You know, if that would have been Lori, the city would have been out. On top of it, he was like, let's just put them in this, what do you call that, toxic land. So we had to fight our people for that. And even on that, it creates division between us. You know, so while we are sitting trying to strategize how do we move forward, we have to be careful with feelings. We have to be careful with offending. We have to be careful with politics coming in our way. You know, for example, right now we got Trump and Kamala. We got a lot of people that didn't even know who she was before now. They're like, we're voting for her because we don't want Trump. Okay, but if you're going to vote for her, know that you got to vote for her. And now you got a duty to make sure she is held accountable. You can't just vote to say we put someone in office that is ours and this person is throughout the fight because we're taking the hit. Because we're taking the hit. This is our city. We are organizers. And no matter what they give us, we want more because we've been deprived for so long that when we say it's one of ours, we need understanding, we need love, we need care right away. So we want the mayor to move on the biggest issues, defund the police, you know, all of that other stuff. We want transparency. We want community involvement. Chicago wants to be seen. They want to be felt. And I don't think that Chicago moves beyond the groups and the organizing coalitions. And we need to make sure that we're touching communities and neighborhoods. And we need to make sure that we're listening to the people that are actually impacted on the floor by the politician's position. You know, we can't continue to allow just to take a beat in and just be like, we can organize and get this better. At what point are we going to draw the line and say, enough is enough? We're tired of starting over. We're tired of starting over. When are we going to be able to carry that fight and move forward with everybody and be able to not be so divided? Because Brandon being up there should not been so feeling like Chicago is. And I'm saying this because the Socialist Conference gives us a safe space for this. You know, I before this, I was very upset There's no one to call. There's no one to say, hey, I'm feeling some sort of way. We need to, you know, sit the city down and talk with the people. We need transparency and understanding. Until I came to the conference to realize, you know, our fight is bigger than one politician. And our fight is bigger, and we will continue. And
thanks for listening. If you like this episode, subscribe to our podcast and to the Haymarket Books YouTube channel, where events like this one are hosted live. And don't forget to check out haymarketbooks.org.